What we just heard was a traditional song, which would be sung at Passover Seder. I use that as a segue into the seventh in the presentation of the series, God is Not One, today's presentation on Judaism. It's my great pleasure to introduce Helen Christensen, who is a retired University of Regina professor, is the current chair of the Sunday Service Committee. She and her husband Bruno, our lay chaplain, have lived in Regina since 1989, and have been members of this congregation for about the last 3 years. Helen.
On. There we go. Okay, I've now put it in my pocket. Okay, that's done now. This, folks, has been a real challenge, and it's not the first time I do a presentation here or in my life, but I found this chapter to be really, really challenging. It's going to take a little bit longer than 20 minutes, I warn you of this. I think, Alan, you will recognize the fact that I originally wanted to do one presentation, and the chapter was, there was so much in it, I felt that I was going to take two. So, Alan, you understand what happens from that. So, I'm going to begin by reading directly from the book, because I couldn't summarize this. This is just so neat. So, Judaism. Judaism begins and ends with a story. If Christianity is to a great extent about doctrine and Islam about ritual, Judaism is about narrative. To be a Jew is to tell and retell a story, to wrestle with its key symbols, the character of God, the people of Israel, and the vexed relationship between the two. This story has everything you could ever want in a good read. It has sex, deceit, love, murder, transgression, and tragedy of biblical proportions. It has some of the greatest characters in world literature, not least the adulterer and murderer, King David, and the capricious God of the Hebrew Bible. It even has a narrative arc, from garden to desert to city. The Jewish narrative is a story of slavery and freedom, of covenants made and broken and made anew. But above all else, it is a story of a people banished and then called home, a story of exile and return. So that's just the introduction. You can see why, you know. I could just read the rest of this, but you'll fall asleep. Okay. And I say Judaism, it can be Judaism, whatever. Pick one. The religion is called Judaism because the Jewish people trace their heritage to the Hebrew people who lived in the kingdom of Judah. And I looked up the etymology. I was thinking, how do you get from Judaism to Jew? Well, just the short part. Yehudi, biblical Hebrew, went to the Old French, and Bruno, Jew, G-I-U, which then went into the English, Jew, J-E-W, Jewish. So there we have it. Judaism is a religion of memory. Jews are people who remember who they are by telling their story and following their laws. For Jews, narrative and law are inseparable. Judaism is both a religion and a people. The task of human life is to walk humbly with God, and in so doing, to repair the world. Redemption is in this world, accomplished not in heaven, but on earth. Redemption comes by doing rather than by believing. It is by practicing, now listen carefully for the number, the 613 commandments described in the Jewish scriptures that we bring holiness to our imperfect world. In this sense, Judaism differs dramatically from Christianity. Christians strive to keep the faith. Jews strive to keep the commandments. And I supplemented this prothrill by looking a few things up in Google because I thought you'd be interested in this. Religion and the people. So Judaism is both the least and the greatest of the great religions. Strictly by the numbers, it's by far the smallest. There are only about 14 million Jews worldwide. Now, listen to this part. Compared to Muslims and Christians, for instance, estimated to be about 2 billion each. Now, if you remember your math, I had to look it up. 1,000 million equals a billion. So 14 million, we're not even close. The Jewish population in Israel, the only country with a Jewish majority, is about 4.9 million. More Jews, about 5.2 million, live in the United States. But no other country has a Jewish citizenry even approaching 1 million. And most people in the world have never met a Jew. Canada has the fourth largest Jewish population in the world after the U.S., Israel, and France. There are estimated to be 375,000 Jews in Canada, many of these in Toronto and Montreal. Wayne, Westmount, we know where that is. And Vancouver, Ottawa, Winnipeg, and Calgary also have large Jewish communities. And I looked on the synagogue websites for Saskatchewan. I couldn't find the number of people, but Saskatoon and Regina have about 200 Jewish families each registered at the synagogue. So how many people? I don't know how many that's. On the other hand, Judaism has wielded influence far out of proportion to its numbers. And if in the book they go into the Jewish influence in the United States, it's just absolutely incredible. They're everywhere. But I didn't want to go into that here because, you know, I couldn't see anything for Canada. Maybe we didn't list it. I don't know. Anyway, so influence far out of proportion to its numbers. It started as a monotheistic revolution, belief in one God, that remade the Western world. And we also know that it stands at the crossroads of a volatile international conflict between Jews, Christians, and Muslims in the Middle East. And I thought, isn't that interesting that we scheduled the presentation for Judaism the day after the death of Sharon? It's really weird. Well, okay. I did have to put this in, though, that 14 of Time magazine's 100 most influential people in the 20th century were Jewish. Isn't that amazing, eh? And I named three that you know already, Steven Spielberg and Frank Albert Einstein. It's sometimes said that Judaism is about ethnicity as much as about religion. But Jews come from all sorts of different ethnic groups. And here, this I found, I'm going to keep saying I found this fascinating because I did. By far, the largest group are those of German and Eastern European descent, the Ashkenazi Jews. There are Jews of Spanish and Arab descent, Sephardic Jews, and Ethiopian Jews of African descent. Like Hindus, however, Jews function as an ethnicity of sorts, bound together by a shared sense of community. This solidarity is fostered by the observance of rituals and festivals that set Jews apart. But even the unobservant are still considered Jews. And those of us who have Jewish friends, we know about the different festivals. They're just part of that. To say that you are Jewish may mean that you believe in the God of Israel, attempt to follow his commandments, and study the Hebrew Bible, the Torah. It may also mean that you come from a Jewish family. You can't be both an atheist and a Muslim, but there are Jews who do not believe in God. So, the Torah, I looked this up several times. You're nodding because you know this book. Anyway, it's probably, so the Torah, it's probably safe to say that all of us know the stories of Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden and of Moses leading the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt, only to spend 40 years in the wilderness by the Promised Land. The climax of this story comes on Mount Sinai when God delivers the Torah through Moses and in so doing offers a new way out of exile, a new path back home. Torah is typically translated as law, but it actually implies teaching or guidance. Torah refers in the first instance to the five books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Torah refers more broadly to the oral law, the interpretive tradition said to have been revealed alongside the written law to Moses on Sinai and now written down in the core texts of the rabbinic tradition. And rabbi means teacher. Rabbinic tradition, the Mishnah, which was the year 200 of the Common Era, so the beginning of the 20th century, the Jerusalem Talmud, 4th century, and the Babylonian Talmud, 5th century, so there are two Talmuds. Both Mishnah and Talmud mean instruction. Studying and debating the Tanakh and the Talmud is Torah too. And according to the Jewish folk saying, even the conversation of Jews is Torah. So when people talk about the Torah, they mean whatever you want it to mean. Arguing for the sake of God. What is required in Judaism is not to agree, but to engage. It is not a religion in which everyone agrees. Oh, can I rephrase that? What is required in Unitarianism is not to agree. Does this sound familiar? So, Torah also means the entire Hebrew Bible, which Jews refer to not as the Old Testament. So, don't say that, but I think we all already know that. But as the Tanakh. The Tanakh begins with two different sources of creation. In its 24 books, two of which, Ruth and Esther, are named after women, we hear of God and angels, kings and commoners. We encounter proverbs, prophecies, love poems, hymns, theological history, wisdom literature, law, and apocalyptic visions. Judaism's second major text, the Talmud, and this I found fascinating, I keep saying this, but listen, is a vast tangle of various lines of argumentation. Now, I'm going to try to do this. With a passage at the center of each page, surrounded by interpretations. So how do you read it? You read the middle, and then you read all the stuff, and then you add your own, I suppose. I don't know. Most human beings find ambiguity intolerable. Jews are trained not just to abide ambiguity, but to glory in it. Oh, Unitarians are trained. Can we do that too, can't we? Okay. Converts and creeds. Judaism is not a missionary religion. So there has never been a practical reason for Jews either to define their message to outsiders or to stay on that message. Judaism has always been more about practice than belief. What makes you a Jew is being born a Jew. What keeps you active is participating in the life of the Jewish community. Jews have long seen themselves not only as a people, but as a people under threat. With Judaism, the community itself was the starting point. The purpose of the Jewish tradition is to keep a people together. Most fundamentally, however, Jews are knit together by memory. This memory speaks of one God who is personal, but by no means should be understood as a human being. The Jewish God stands above and beyond the world he created, and so Jews insist that God not be depicted in human form. So, no paintings, no statues. Even writing the name of God is problematic for many Jews, who write the English word God as G, underline, D, avoiding the O, in order to avoid disrespecting the divine when the paper on which the word is printed is thrown away. Now, exile and return. And Prothero, by now, I think we know that he sees everything as a problem and a solution. The problem in Judaism centers on the community rather than on the individual. The problem is exile, distance from God and from where we ought to be. The solution is return, to go back to God and to our own true home. The techniques for making this journey are two: to tell the story and follow the law, to remember and to obey. The Jewish people live with hope for the place to which they are going and with lamentations over the places they have left behind. There is some hope for a Messiah, literally the Anointed One, but that Messiah has not yet come. So, it is the job of the Jewish people to make things right and put an end to exile. However, until they complete the task or the Messiah does it for them, they live in a middle space of almost and not yet. The story for this pattern of exile and return centers on the destruction of the first temple of Jerusalem in 586 before the Common Era, so 2,500 years ago, by the Babylonians, the destruction of the first temple, who also destroyed Judah, sending many Israelites into exile in Babylon, which is modern-day Iraq. This exile experience led to the development of the synagogue. And I looked up that word. Synagogue means bringing together. So the development of the synagogue as a place of prayer and study, and to the widespread adoption of portable practices such as circumcision. After the Babylonians were themselves defeated about 50 years later, in 538 before the Common Era, defeated by the Persians, the Jews, as the Israelites were now called, were allowed to return to Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. Most of them did not return. In 70 Common Era, nearly 2,000 years ago, all but the western wall of the Second Temple was destroyed by the Romans, and the Jews were once again sent into exile. For roughly 2,000 years after the Romans destroyed the Second Temple, this theme of exile and return lived more in the imagination than on the land until the State of Israel was founded in 1948. And there are things that I think it was in this chapter, Ethel, I'm just asking you, or did I see it on the internet, that part of the creation of Israel, maybe some of you know, was in response to the Holocaust and so forth, and that's what brought it about. Anyway, when the State of Israel was founded in 1948, it thus became possible for Jews to live in and govern their homeland. The temple has not been rebuilt, however. Though Orthodox Jews pray three times a day for its restoration, The land on which, according to Jewish tradition, the temple once stood now houses the Dome of the Rock, the world's oldest Muslim building. And did you see some of the stuff about Sharon, that he went there and as a result there were all kinds of riots and so forth? Anyway, although there is now a Jewish homeland, many Jews choose to remain in exile and even to reject the distinction between the homeland and the diaspora, the scattering. While Jews now live between exile and return, they also live between liberation and the law. And so we have the Exodus narrative. Remember the Jews into slavery in Egypt, the murder of the male Jews, the Jews allowed to leave, the Egyptians in pursuit, the parting of the Red Sea, the Jews escaped, the Egyptians drowned. But it must not be forgotten that it was in the midst of this liberation story that God laid down the law. Throughout the Tanakh, God and human beings enter into sacred contracts called covenants. One of the distinctive features of Judaism is that its monotheism is ethical. In other words, God is not only all-powerful, but all-good, which is why Jews throughout history have complained when God has not lived up to his own ethical standards, allowing the Holocaust to occur, for instance. Halakha, I said halakha this time, or maybe it's halakha, I don't know, which translates as Jewish law, really refers to way or path. It is not only about morality, but also about how we should mourn, eat, and observe the Sabbath. So when Jews speak of observing the law, they are invoking not only the ethical, but also the ritual dimension of religion. Almost all religious groups use food ways to distinguish themselves from their neighbors. But observant Jews seem to be particularly strict when it comes to what they can and cannot eat. Only fish with scales, and this is just a few of them, eh? Only fish with scales and fins. No pork or birds of prey. No lobsters or shrimp. No mixing of meat and dairy. So many Jews have two separate sets of plates and flatware not to mix the meat and the dairy. When Judaism became Judaism, Judaism, as we know it today, developed between the time of the destruction of the first temple by the Babylonians and the destruction of the second temple by the Romans. In the wake of the Babylonian exile, Jews had developed the institution of the synagogue as a place for study and prayer. They had also started to collect the books that would constitute the Tanakh, the Jewish scriptures. These steps toward a more prayerful and portable religion accelerated after the destruction of the Second Temple, shifting from sacrifice and sacred text to a new religion of rabbis reading and interpreting texts in synagogues and Judaism as we know it today. So it centers on the rabbi. Contemporary Jewish life is rabbinic. Its exemplars are rabbis. It centers on books rather than altars. It sanctifies the world not through temple sacrifice, but through words and deeds. Jews today follow the Talmud, the book of instruction, considered to be the textual heart of Judaism. So, to refer to Judaism today is to refer to the Judaism formed by the rabbis in the first two centuries of the Common Era, who were deeply influenced by the Greeks and transformed Judaism, transformed often quite radically by successive generations of Jews. Now, let's look a little bit about holidays. One continuity between Israelite religion and rabbinic Judaism is Shabbat, or the Sabbath. Shabbat is discussed and debated repeatedly in the Talmud, which prohibits 39 different types of labor on this day of rest, from cooking and sewing to lighting a fire and putting it out. What is actually prohibited, and here's another part of fun fact, are creative acts. You see, so cooking and sewing, these are creative acts. We're prohibited because they mimic the creativity that God showed on the first 6 days. On Shabbat, families gather around the dinner table, lighting candles, saying special prayers, drinking wine, and enjoying a special kind of bread, which is often shaped into braided loaves. Hanukkah commemorates the retaking of Jerusalem in the second century, and Rabbi Parnes talked to us about it a while ago. Purim, or Purim, commemorates events recorded in the Book of Esther, in which the hero, Mordecai, foils a plot by the villain Haman to destroy the Jews. And Purim is on March 16th this year. Perhaps more than any other religion, and here are the major holidays, Judaism orders the world in time. Its three pilgrim festivals are Passover, the Exodus from Egypt, Pentecost, the giving of the Torah to the Israelites on Mount Sinai, and Tabernacles, Sukkot, the flight from Egypt into the wilderness. And I just lost my last page. Here we go. The other two major holidays are Rosh Hashanah, the high holy days of the new year, Jewish New Year, and Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. Of these holy days, Passover is the most widely practiced. There are seders, special meals with special foods, especially unleavened bread. And I think maybe some of us have been to seders. I have a very good friend who now lives in Hamilton, but I've been to seder, the Passover seder. Other people? Oh, it's very interesting. Yes? Okay. There is no faith prerequisite for participating in Passover. You do not have to believe in God. You do not even have to be Jewish. To gather for Passover is to stand in a tradition of a people who have gathered for millennia to tell their story in their own languages and on their own terms. Seders typically begin with lots of discussion and end with lots of singing. Passover this year is on April 15th, so a good meal, singing, and so forth, so find your Jewish friends. Finally, life cycle rituals. Jews also observe rites of passage, such as birth, adulthood, marriage, and death. Traditionally, the first of these two passages were celebrated more for males than for females through the circumcision ritual and the bar mitzvah. Many Jews now have naming ceremonies for female infants and bat mitzvahs for 12-year-old girls. Jewish mourning practices include a 7-day period of sitting Shiva, Shiva means seven, in the home following a burial, prayers for the dead, and a death anniversary remembrance. And I was kind of curious to see when the funeral was going to be, because according to Jewish law, he had to be buried within 36 hours. And that made it very awkward. No, it's more than 36 hours. So that made it very awkward. You know, how can you send people from all over the world if you have a 36-hour time limit? But I noticed that it's more than 36 hours. I guess there's practicality, eh? While many Reform Jews deny the bodily resurrection, and this is almost the last sentence, so. While many Reform Jews deny the bodily resurrection, and many Orthodox Jews affirm it, almost all Jews agree that our focus should be on this life. And that's a concluding sentence, but I'll just change it. While many Unitarians deny the bodily resurrection, and many Unitarians affirm it, almost all Unitarians agree that our focus should be on this life, and then I would add, and community. So that, I think, covers one part of it, and I'll get into the different sections of Judaism next month. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Helen. I think we still have a few minutes for questions.
Comments, so. Not questions. You can't answer questions. I'll pass you the book. You can read it.
So I suppose all religions have their beliefs, but they also have actions. And if you look at Christianity, you can look at the beliefs, but some actions, I think, require some looking at, like the Crusades and the Spanish Inquisition, etc. So I would say the same with Judaism. Zionism is, I guess, I don't, you didn't cover Zionism, I don't
know.
Next
month.
Next month, okay. So anyway, I think aspects of Zionism require a lot of looking at these days, and not only in terms of what's happening in Palestine and the treatment of people there, but also the extreme influence that Jews have, especially in the United States. There's the American Israel Political Action Committee that keeps an eye on all politicians and makes sure they are not anti-Zionist. And especially now, there's a lot of pressure to put an end to the discussion about bringing Iran back into some sort of accepted circle. And I just hope that that doesn't lead to some sort of war with Iran or something. I'm very upset about that part. So.
So this is kind of an introduction to the next part, which will be in February. Oh, somebody right there.
I just want to mention you cannot become a Jew. You have to be born a Jew.
Yes.
In other words, they're all related genetically. A friend of mine who has become a Jew, as far as she's concerned, she's had to learn how to do everything that's kosher and all that and do things a Jewish way. She considers herself Jewish. So by this definition, she's not really a Jew then, is she?
No. And there is some a little bit of a problem, too. You know, not with the sons. Funny, you know. What if your daughter marries a non-Jew? What's going to happen? And, of course, we know that there are intermarriage. But you can't. Everything that I looked at, and I even asked Jeremy when he was here, and he said that you can't become a Jew. You are a Jew or you aren't. That's all.
I found it interesting, Ellen, when you mentioned the dialogue around the law and the interpretations, and you can have something at the top and then all of these interpretations listed on the page, and they get involved in great discussions about that. That, to me, seems a very helpful process. I read Benazir Bhutto's autobiography, or her last book, and I've forgotten the exact title, but there were a lot of quotations there from the Koran where she interpreted there were support for the role of women and education and all of those things. But when I read those passages, I didn't see that there. And there didn't seem to be this ability to take a concept and dialogue with it and wrestle with it and come out to some conclusion. But if everybody can take their own conclusion from passage A, it doesn't help us very much.
Well, that is part of Judaism, and I'm just going to anticipate the ending to the second part. Here's what he says at the last. If religion without controversy is dead, Judaism may well be the liveliest of the great religions. That's kind of interesting.
Thank you again.